Madison. Oh, it's so good.
Back post, and Payne gives Mark Madison the 1-0 lead. Enjoy this moment, Stephen Payne.
The Pink Men don't quit.
What is up, Flock and friends? Welcome into another episode of Talkin' Flock, your full Mingo podcast. It is I, your host, Rob Chapel, here with Alex Alvarado. How you doing, Alex?
Not too bad. Let's get to it.
Let's jump into some team news first. We've got a few items to talk about. First of all, the sad news, and we can congratulate Leonella Bessie on her retirement as a live mascot. I have video somewhere. I couldn't find it. I was going to try to post it, but I have video somewhere of my youngest child chasing Leonella around the field in 2019 after a match when they used to let us be on the field for our post-game chats with players. The league does not let us do that anymore. So now we have which are frankly much more professional press conferences in the forward club, which makes more sense. But anyway, the chasing the cow around the pitch was always a fantastic thing in 2019. No word yet on if there's going to be another, if they're still going to do the petting zoo. I don't know if they're going to bring all the other animals or if this is.
They might be moving on.
There was some talk on Twitter about, you know, somebody said we need to get a new mascot and name it Kylian Mbappe.
I like that one.
the club came back with Luka Modric. So I don't know if they're actually going to get another cow, or if they're going to just continue to bring the animals, or if Haven Petting Farm, who supplies the animals, if that relationship is moving on or what. But we will find out as we go through the season. Another bit of team news, and this is something you can help with before. If you listen to this on Thursday, Wednesday night or Thursday, you can go vote. IHateYourClub.com has been having the I Hate Your Crest tournament. Ford Madison, as to be expected, was a number one seed in its bracket, in its regional, whatever. And so far has defeated Academica, Little Rock Rangers, South Georgia Tormenta, Santa Barbara Sky, and the best of all, Union Omaha in the Final Four. We are now in the final against Minnesota Aurora, one of the fantastic stories of the W League, which has a fantastic crest, an asymmetrical crest, which is interesting. So you can now, go vote IHateYourClub.com. Voting is open now. You can vote for your Mingo crest to be best in the nation, at least according to I Hate Your Crest fans. We also learned this week that Ford Madison will continue its run at the U.S. Open Cup trophy in Chicago on Wednesday, 7 p.m. at Chicago Fire 2 at SeatGeek Stadium in Bridgeview, Illinois. They are taking a bus. A bus ticket is $50. I think that includes a game ticket also. In its only really full preseason match, friendly, Ford Madison actually beat Chicago Fire 2 3-1. Preseason, different rosters, doesn't mean much, but, you know, I think we beat them last year too. So that'll be a fun match. That's Wednesday at 7 p.m. in Bridgeview, Illinois. And one more thing I'll mention, April 10th, which is the Wednesday before the home opener, the club is having a player meet and greet at the Forward Club, April 10th, 6 p.m. Don't know which players, but, you know, stop by. See them. They're cool. They're cool guys. And they're very friendly. And you'll like them. Two brief notes from the league. Chattanooga Red Wolves are having their first two home games postponed because they screwed up the grass. They apparently planted or, you know, laid down a type of sod that only really takes root when nighttime temperatures are above 60 degrees. So they kind of planted it too early and or too late. Maybe they should have done this before. I don't know. So this weekend's match against Union Omaha and their next weekend's match, this April 6th match against Charlotte, will both be rescheduled for later in the season, which sucks for Omaha and Charlotte because now they're going to end up with a midweek game in August or something because Chattanooga couldn't get it together. And the last thing, you may notice some teams that have academy programs, not all of them do, but like I think Spokane does, I think Lexington does, I think Tormenta does, might actually bring 20 players to a game, because USL, both levels, Championship and USL League One, are now allowed to bring two U18 players on top of the normal 18. So you actually have, and they could, they're available for selection. So that's an idea to get the kids in, to get a couple extra guys who wouldn't necessarily have a roster spot. At least they're on the bench. At least they're like in the professional environment, and getting a look around and maybe getting a few minutes at the end of a match. So I think that's pretty cool. Would that, do you think that's valuable to a young player? I mean, you're absolutely coaching young players a lot. Just being in that professional environment for a game.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I wonder about like the NCAA regulations around that.
There's very specific requirements that they can have an academy contract. We had an academy guy last year, Tina Vasquez, where they're not getting paid, but they're able to suit up occasionally for certain matches or in this particular initiative while maintaining their eligibility. Yeah. So that it has been thought about by the league, which is great. All right, so let's get to this game. It's always tough to talk on a podcast about a 0-0 draw.
Yeah,
and then with this club, with Ford Madison, we end up doing that a lot, and it's a little frustrating. But we said last week that there are draws that feel like a loss, which is the first game, and there are draws that feel like a win, which is kind of this one. Like this is, I would have to think, a successful result. Do you think so?
Yeah, considering.
Yeah, considering. I gotta say, early on, I was reminded of the Wisconsin Badger basketball game the day before, where Wisconsin was the 5 seed and got completely blown out by the 12 seed, James Madison. But partly because early in that Wisconsin basketball game, James Madison players were contesting everything. They did not give Wisconsin any room to breathe. And I kind of felt like Greenville was doing that to us, to Madison this time. They were just pushing, pressing, not giving Madison any space.
On and off the ball.
Yep.
Off the ball especially. I think that was kind of the difference for, like, Chaney not being able to get into rhythm.
Oh yeah, they were just kind of.
Oh man, if you watch just him off ball running, they were bumping into him, and he got really frustrated, you know, deservedly a little bit. Like, yeah. But it worked into their game plan. I mean,
yeah, and he and this is the first time we got to see him and Galindres together, and they were pretty quiet. I mean, Greenville kept them pretty quiet. They had a couple of decent chances. Chaney hit the side netting that in the first half that one time, but. But like you said, Greenville said, we are not going to let these guys beat us.
Yeah. Right. They were working the same space a lot of times. I noticed, like, one of them would get the ball and the other would kind of be near. And so it was almost like, again, this was the first time they've been paired together, right?
Yeah.
In, like, a game at this level. So, I mean, that's just probably a product of that in a sense.
Yeah. It was to the point that, and they have the same, like, hair color, and one of them was 9, one of them was 19, and the Mark Schoenster and Ross Davenport on the call just could not tell them apart, which was mildly humorous, but do you think that as a pairing, do you think they'll just have to like work it out?
I think you want to have those two guys on the pitch, so you want to try and find a way, right, to figure it out. But I think as a coach, it's like how long do you go with that? How long do you stick with it? So I'll be curious to see how that partnership develops going forward into the season.
Let's talk about Burn Shipman for a minute. You were watching the match and you texted me just the word "burned" with an exclamation point. Obviously, we'll talk about the penalty that save, but just overall, I mean, he had a pretty good night, didn't he?
Yeah. He had a good game.
As a goalkeeper, what are you looking for, and what did he particularly do well this game?
Well, I think taking into account the last few games, you know, you look at, he didn't play the last game against Duluth.
Right.
He played against Tormenta, but only had one or two shots. So, like, this is his first match where he has to actually,
we got tested,
step up and get tested, right? And he answered.
Yeah.
I think I really liked his approach to the penalty, quite frankly. I think, you know, constantly moving.
Yeah.
Doing a little gamesmanship to get it going. I mean, everyone does that nowadays, right?
Sure.
But I think one of the things that I love for keepers and penalties is to always be moving, you know, because if you just stand still, then it's almost like it gives the striker a little bit of sense of where to go and maybe like to some composure. But mm-hmm. when you're moving, it's like, and he was doing that the whole time, like every step. And I think the run up kind of helped him a little bit.
Yeah.
The guy couldn't get any power behind that ball. And so all he had to do was pick the right side. And, you know, the guy put it in an accurate spot. Like that was bottom corner. And he exploded off the line and he held that. I love that as a keeper. You know, it's like when you get to hold a shot, like, and, mm-hmm. and I'm sure at the pro level it's even a greater feeling. But like on a penalty too, it's like, oh yeah.
That was the incredible part. And let's take a step back and talk about what led to the penalty. It was on the edge of the box, going away from goal, and Michael Chalaka just inexplicably pushed a dude over, like 1 foot inside the box, like another half a second, it would have been a direct. It would have been just a free kick outside the box. But I don't know what Chalaka's thinking there. I mean, that type of play is kind of what Matt Glazer liked about him. Like when we got him, he said, you know, he's a nasty dude. He's a little nasty. He isn't going to be afraid to step on some feet. But you know, you can't give away a penalty like that.
Yeah, that one's a tough one. Yeah. I watched the reactions of like his teammates, and like no one really argued the call.
Right.
You know, like. People were arguing whether or not it was in the box or not.
Sure.
But it wasn't like whether it was a foul.
Yeah. No, it unquestionably was. But going away from the goal, like he didn't need to do that. Like he had the ball contained. Like, so I don't know. But Leo Castro steps up to take it and takes about a half an hour to walk up to the ball. What is he doing?
Hey, to each their own. I mean, maybe he adjusts his run up next time. And I mean, because the thing is, if you take that run up and then you slot it bottom corner and like the keeper doesn't save it, it's like, oh, it looks good. So yeah, I think just with penalties generally, like people are going to do what they're going to do. And at the end of the day, the striker should put in the back of the net. But as a keeper, you know, you love that lack of pressure.
Mm-hmm. Byrne did save two penalties last season. And after the second one, told the media folks like that he. It's not lucky. He like has a system or he has a strategy of some kind. Wouldn't tell us what it was, of course. Mm-hmm. But you talk about just the constant movement. What else are you looking for in the run up to give you some sort of clue as to which way it's going to go or where?
I think in a game you could kind of notice the tendencies of a player, especially if it's like a striker, someone who hits.
Well,
Leo
Castro is known. There's no quantity in this league, so you know which way he wants to go.
Right. So, usually, obviously, like you can look at film.
Yeah.
But if you're matching up against guys who there's not very much film on in a game, you can actually, like, read the tendencies of a player and how they like to shoot and which way. I mean, as a keeper, like you observe for 100% of the game. It's really just like absorbing information about the game, what's going on, and player tendencies. You know, the flow of the game, where the spaces are and where to work them. And it was interesting. I'm kind of going on a tangent here, but the announcer in like the 25th or 30th minute, like started talking about Matt Glazer being a keeper. And he mentioned something about like keepers not, I got to pull up my quote here. He said, goalkeepers aren't really involved in tactics.
Oh, I missed that.
And to me, as a keeper, I felt a bit offended, because, and a coach as well. It's like, I don't know. We're getting a bit into semantics here, but as a keeper, you observe the game the whole time. I mean, you're fully immersed, and you need to be on point with all phases of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to experience it all on the pitch in a way that you don't really get on the sideline,
mm-hmm.
from the stands, even in the middle of the field. Mm-hmm. You know, so. Honestly, I think goalkeepers sometimes have the potential to be some of the smartest players in the game.
Yeah.
And so that's how you can take, like, if you're very strategic and you notice like player tendencies, you can almost use that to your advantage when it comes to penalties.
So you think it's reasonable to think Byrne had a pretty good idea he was going to Castro's left, Byrne's right, and was able to guess the right way, to go the right way. But then, like you said, the really remarkable thing was that he held it.
Yeah.
Was that he palmed that ball with one hand and wrapped it up, and there was no rebound.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
Yeah. You love that. As a keeper coach, it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's like.
Keep that ball. Now, I have to say, I was confident. As they were laying out the penalty, I was recalling the last time Byrne faced a penalty in Greenville, against Greenville, is in Madison. It was a he didn't hold that one, which was just fine, because it popped out and we ran down and scored a goal the other end. 4 seconds later, which was pretty great. But it's very cool, and it's not surprising. And given that penalty save, as well as however many other saves he had, I think he had 4 saves altogether. He ends up team of the week, right? He's nominated for save of the week. So vote for that. Overall, just a great performance by Byrne, and a clean sheet, which is frankly a team thing, right? So speaking of that, you mentioned last week you were keeping an eye on the left side defending for Madison. Understanding that Chilaka did give up the penalty on the left side, overall, you know, besides that, what was your impression of the left side defending particularly, but also defending just
So I noticed that they pushed, or they slid Boyce a little bit farther back, made him more of a six in this game, or maybe he had stints in there in the first match or against Tormenta, but here against Greenville, Boyce played the six, and I love watching him play, man.
Yeah.
I love watching him play. Like, the effort that he gives and the intensity, always 110%. And it was for 90 minutes, too. I mean, even there at the end of the game when we were kind of pushing, he was a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, from what I noticed, at least, is he kind of switched a little bit with Gebhardt. Gebhardt shifted up into more of a 10 role.
Mm-hmm.
And Boy slid a little bit further back. And I think that really helped on the left side specifically when that would when they would push in that space. And so, unfortunate, the penalty. You know, I watched that happen, and I was like, I really hope I didn't jinx it. outside of that, I think we struggled, not necessarily, like, I think our defense, and we took a lot more pressure on that game because we struggled to build out of the back.
Mm-hmm.
Greenville did a really good job of pressing the midfield, like our sixes, and that's who we essentially used to unlock everything in the Tormenta game. And so then as the game went on, you know, we put our subs in the 70th minute.
Mm-hmm.
We had just a lone nine instead of a double nine. I think that might have helped open up a little bit more, and they started to really work the width and change the game plan a bit. I know we were used to, you know, the cutting in and playing through the middle, but Greenville, again, they did such a good job defending the middle that, you know, unfortunately, the last 20 minutes we weren't able to get something out of it, but I was definitely impressed and at least happy to see adjustments made and an improvement. And also, I think a big part of our push in those last 20 minutes is our depth.
Yeah, no doubt. When you have, and they were even talking about it before the match, like the amount of talent we have coming off the bench is really impressive. And to bring three guys on at once, Wolfgang, Prentice, Jimmy Villalobos, and Desi and Bartman, kind of all at once, that completely changes the complexion of the match, right? And you saw maybe the best chance in the second half came with Bartman and Payne working up the right hand side and then switching to the and then ultimately switching to the left. But what I liked about that particular sequence was they got back to the real tight space passing that they were really good at last year, which then, if you maintain possession in a tight space, that can draw defenders toward you and open up space on the other side, which is exactly what happened. And it ended in a cross to no one, right? But at least it was more hopeful buildup than we had seen for much of the game.
Yeah, they call that an overload.
Yeah. Interesting couple of stats here I want to just kind of mention. To me, this game felt pretty open. Like, it didn't feel like a box-to-box grinded out. I mean, the ball was really on both ends, but there were very few actual chances.
Yeah.
You know, Greenville only had 8 shots. We only had 5. Neither team was really, really pressing. But then in distribution, and this is, again, this is the sort of the midfield defending on both sides, Madison's passing accuracy was only 75%. Like, we're usually in the 85 range. And Greenville's was only 78.5. So neither team had a really easy time connecting and keeping possession for any period at all.
I wonder, I was watching the game, and on the broadcast, you can see only like 2/3 of the pitch.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And I wonder if part of that might be it's a more of a slanted turf, so it's more tilted outwards, if that makes any sense, mm-hmm. you know? So, like, you know how a dome goes up and meets in the top in the middle? Uh-huh. Some turf fields, like DeForest High School, they have a turf field like that where it's just almost, like, steep to the sidelines for drainage.
Uh-huh.
And when you're playing a soccer game on turf in those kinds of conditions on that kind of surface, it's almost difficult to really connect passes. And I think I was more so frustrated because I couldn't really see the full scale of the pitch. I wanted to see, like, all the formations in the press because, again, like, Greenville, they were doing such a good job of pressing our back line and our midfield, our sixes specifically, that I couldn't really see the weak side, and that was a bit frustrating. But
it was also very windy.
That, too. I mean, that first half was large in part because of the wind. Like, that's a that's a big like, it has a big impact on the game.
Yeah. I also want to mention John Murphy, who I think had a pretty decent game as a I think he and Boyce were kind of that when the double pivot, whatever that means. But Murphy was in that sixth spot quite a lot as well. But he and I thought he did fine there, and he did find himself a little bit higher occasionally. But he also he could have been sent off in about the the ninth minute.
Yeah, it was early. I was surprised he didn't get sent off.
Right? Why didn't he get sent off? Because what happened was he had possession of the ball. A Greenville player was, I don't remember who it was, but was really pressing him, was like right up on his back, actually knocked him over. Like, the Greenville player could have been called for a foul maybe. But Murphy was kind of shielding the ball and then went down and then reached, and then the ball was rolling away from him, and there were two Greenville players who might have snatched it up. And he reached out with his hand and grabbed the ball and pulled it back into himself.
It's right at like the top of the 18.
Yeah. And the only reason I can think of that, we saw Timmy Mell get sent off for that last year. But in that instance, Mell was the last guy back. So the only thing I can think of, because it was just outside the box, but it was a little bit off to the left-hand side, or of Greenville's left. So maybe there were other defenders back that he wasn't the last man back. But still, you fall on a ball, you grab it with your hand, that's almost always a red card, isn't it?
Well, not always a red card. I think it depends on the zone of the pitch where it's being made, you know? Like, guys will do that in the middle of the pitch, and it's like, okay.
Yeah. Right. But if it stops, it's a scoring chance.
Right. I mean, like, to me, I saw that, and I was like, I was surprised I didn't see a red come out. And I think it's difficult because you don't want to be critical of officials. We need officials in the game, and it's hard to come by, and it's a hard job.
Yeah.
The only thing I can think of is he didn't want to impact the game that early.
I mean, he got a yellow.
And there was someone close enough that he felt that it was reasonable to just give a yellow.
Yeah, and you felt like maybe it wasn't like an obvious – it wasn't denial of a goal-scoring opportunity, or denial of an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, which is kind of the standard, because it was off to the side. Maybe there were some other defenders in the box that we couldn't see, so it might have been the right call, and it might have been a slightly generous call.
Yeah. Well, I think – I mean, we even had a second – potential red card when Chaney had that handball. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, right before he got taken off, they had that handball and Greenville were going for it, and the announcer was like, I don't know why they're really arguing, it doesn't really matter. And I'm thinking in my head, he already has a yellow, like, maybe. But I also think it would have been like, wow, are you really gonna give him a red card for that? The ball was going out, right? It's not that serious.
But
I could see from like the Greenville players' perspectives why.
So any other moments you want to mention in this one? The best chance Madison had, was in the 36th minute, working up the right-hand side between, Stephen Payne, made a really clever ball he had Derek Gebhardt running with him. As you mentioned before we started, Gebhardt had a pretty decent night in that sort of more forward role. But Payne played him through to the end line, and Derek used his speed to get there and had the keeper in kind of no man's land cut it back to Chaney, and Chaney just put it in the side netting. Didn't quite open his hips open enough or something, I don't know. But that was probably the best chance for Madison, and it was a terrific chance. I mean, it was a good build-up, right, which we didn't see enough of.
I think Gebhard shines in that kind of 10 role, like, going forward when he can really just, like, put his work into moving the ball forward, working the half space, and creating from there. Because, yeah, we saw in the Tormenta game, he was a little bit further back, and I think because of that, he couldn't impact the game as much as he maybe would have liked.
Yeah. And this is a different role than we saw him in last year. This sort of number 10 going forward role is really his natural where he wants to be. He had that sort of wing back role because he's also is a very versatile player and is willing to do what it has to be done, you know, to do what's asked of him. But now we have Ferdi Sousa in that left wing role, so which frees Derek up to be a more central, more attacking player, which is, I think, will yield dividends. After all is said and done, Madison remains one of three unbeaten teams. This feels a little bit like last year. We haven't lost, but we haven't won yet in the league. Obviously, I got the US Open Cup win, which is nice. Only scored one goal, but only conceded one. You know, one Knoxville has two wins already, and Greenville has a win and a draw, and we have two draws. Everybody else has at least lost once. So we'll keep an eye on the table. And up next, we go to Fresno, California for a USL League One After Dark. It's a 9 p.m. kickoff Central Time. We'll visit Jermaine Jones's Central Valley Fuego team that looked really, really good in their opening match and then looked pretty bad in their second match. So we will we'll see. Madison had a tough time in Fresno last year. So we will be watching that. And then we'll Wednesday in Chicago. And then we'll do another sort of late edition next week to kind of cover both of those games. We'll figure that out. We'll figure the schedule out. I'm not sure. Maybe we'll do two episodes next week. We'll see. I don't know.
It's going to be tough travel. California,
yeah,
to Chicago.
Fresno on the weekend, then back. Then where do we go after that? It's another away game on March 30th. No. This weekend is March 30th. I'll come back and we'll figure out what the actual travel schedule is. We'll be right back after this with the skipper himself, Mitch Osmond.
What's up, everybody? This is the star host of Out of the Box Podcast. My podcast is a platform for advocacy, raising awareness about the challenges faced by former inmates and promoting the idea that everybody deserves a second chance. It's my invitation to you to become a part of the movement towards positive change. And I'm excited to tell you it's the newest member of the 365 Media Network of podcasts. We'll have new episodes every other Thursday, so be sure to watch madison365.org/podcast for new episodes or subscribe to Out of the Box Podcast on all your favorite podcast apps. I'm D-Star. Until next time, guys.
And we're back, and joining us now for our player interview this week, the skipper himself, Mitch Osmond. How you doing, Mitch?
Good, good. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, thanks for giving us the time, and we really appreciate it. I know it's kind of a short week because you have a Friday night game, so I appreciate you, and you got to travel on Thursday. So I appreciate you coming in and joining us today. Let me ask first of all, how are you doing? How's the off season been? How's the family? How's the kids? Everybody good?
Yeah, good, good, good. Off seasons, it feels like they get longer as I go. Honestly, but to be fair, the weather was quite cooperative. So it wasn't too bad at all. We also had a good group of guys stick around to train and prepare for the preseason. And you know, the preseason in Madison is a lot of travel, but I think it's a good thing. It serves us well in the long run.
Yeah. I want to ask about the offseason, but I also definitely want to ask you about the preseason too. But for folks who don't know, like we think about, you know, you suddenly appear for us again every April and then disappear in October, but you actually have lives between there. So what does that offseason look like? When you say you're training in the offseason, are you in the gym? What are you doing?
Yeah, a lot of gym work. It's obviously with the demands of playing throughout the season, there's a limit to the amount of gym work that that we can do without, you know, breaking our bodies down. So the off season is the opportunity to really alter our physiology and make the gains that are necessary going into the season. And it kind of, you do them in blocks, but it kind of, it starts off where there's not much running and there's a lot of lifting. And the closer you get to the preseason, it starts to reverse. The lifting will become less and the running will increase and the cardio takes priority. And then, yeah, it's, I think it's different for everybody. Some guys, they go back home to wherever they're from, whether in the States or international. Others live year round where they play, me being one of them. And it's just finding a routine, for me at least, it's finding a routine in off season training that, but being a bit more flexible with the kids and the wife. You know, they have to sacrifice a lot through the year, and so to give them a couple months of being the center of the universe is a good thing as well.
Yeah, no, that's great. So now our you said the winter, as you said, winter was relatively mild this year, but our kids, my kids are like bouncing off the walls to get outside. Are yours?
Yeah. It's you know, there's only so much indoor playgrounds can do, you know. But to be fair to them, like they've been getting outside even in the cold. They'll rug themselves up and go out and play in the woods, or if there's snow, they're out in the snow. So
fair enough. Now your preseason this year was weird. It felt like it was kind of like disjointed or disrupted. Like you had a couple of friendlies that didn't end up happening. To what extent does that bother anybody, or is it just sort of go with the flow? We're training every day anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't. We did go through a lot, to be fair. More than usual, I would say, with this preseason. There was, from, you know, we had a COVID outbreak and some other illnesses that kind of ran havoc through the group for a little while there. So it felt like a big chunk of it was just trying to get everyone healthy, and everyone together to be able to train. And but a big focus for us going into this season to develop on what we built last year is just that mental resilience. So we're looking at it like, all right, this is exactly what we want to focus on and what we want to get better at to serve us on that second half of the season. So it's like, how positive can we be, and how can we stay away from making excuses and complaining, which I think was fantastic with this group so far.
Yeah. Now your results so far have been, you know, it feels a little bit like last year, where you're not losing, but you're not winning. How are you feeling? Like, we'll get to some specifics, but overall, these, you know, three matches in, looking ahead, how are you feeling about the season? How are you feeling about the group?
Yeah, I think if I'm not mistaken, we started last season with the exact same result, two results to start, one away and then 0-0. Look, I think both of those games, we feel that we could have got all 3 points. So there is disappointment there, especially the Tormenta game. But in saying that, I do think that the foundational pieces that we've really focused on over the off-season and pre-season, what the coaches are really pushing us to be as a group, what's our identity, I think we've taken massive steps in the right direction. And although these two games are frustrating and we don't accept the results as anything too positive, we think that where we're at right now is it's going to serve us through to the end of the season when it really matters. And yeah, so it's not ideal. Obviously, we would be like to have picked up all points available, but yeah, we're going in the right direction.
Yeah. The roster moves in the off season, obviously quite different from last year where you only kept a handful of guys. Mm-hmm. This is a more typical USL League One roster turnover, I feel like. But Matt very intentionally targeted guys with League One experience, which mm-hmm. then also means that these are guys you've played against.
Right.
And that you know. What does that does it help you that these are guys you know that you're to gel, or and what does that mean? Like, what is training like? Is training feel like last year's league games because you're up against the same guy?
Yeah, it's a good point. No, I think you know, we in terms of the gelling, it's mm-hmm. it doesn't matter where they come from, whether it's opposition team or on the other side of the world. You have to go through the process of getting to know each other mm-hmm. all the same. To the credit of the coaching staff, like the guys they've brought in terms of personality and character, as top level human beings as you could hope for. And I think that's huge, facing adversity like we have to. And mm-hmm. There's already a good chemistry off the field, and now it's about finding it on the field. And we've had a few injuries as well to start sure. the season, which has really, I think everyone has played, you know, there's no yeah. one that hasn't played. There's been a lot of change in lineups, and it's given an opportunity to everyone. And now hopefully we have everyone healthy and fit, and there might be more continuity with the lineup, but the competition within the group is amazing. I mean, we have so many guys that are starting caliber. So it's exciting to see which guys really push the level and kind of get out in front and try and retain their position, which will serve us going forward.
The commentators in this past game, the guys on ESPN Plus before the game were just looking at the lineups and the rosters and made a note of that you have a ton of talent sitting on your bench.
Oh yeah.
You have six guys on your bench that could start in any other team pretty much. So obviously that, you know, Matt, and you have just a ton of confidence when you make a sub that there's not going to be a drop off that, you know, in terms of the depth, what does that do for not only the actual on the field, but just like mental confidence that you, you know, to know you have that depth of talent?
I mean, it's incredible. I mean, it is, you know, it's been a while since I've been on a team that's been this stacked. Mm-hmm. Like you look at not just the bench, but who might not get into the squad from game to game. You know, like there's a couple of guys that have to sit in the stands every game, and mm-hmm. like there's no one that deserves to be left out of the squad, and mm-hmm. That goes to show how well they've recruited and what the competition is going to look like within the group. And I think, you know, a factor as well into the start of the season that I wanted to maybe mention as well mm-hmm. is we don't play a very straightforward system. We play a more complex mm-hmm. System, you know, with the change in formation on offense and defense, and
a lot of fluidity.
There's a lot of fluidity, and you know, there's it takes time for guys to understand what mm-hmm. their roles are in all phases of the game. And to be fair, I think we're getting it quicker than I thought we might have, mm-hmm. which is a good thing. But there is that little portion of the start of the season that we have to really focus on understanding our roles and really become the team that we want to be for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about obviously defensively, was one of your strengths last year. That's where you live. And so far in 270 minutes, absent one small lapse that led to that Tormenta goal, like, you know, you've been keeping clean sheets. How are you feeling about that as the foundation and talk to us also about Byron Shipman and the game he had the other night. Just, you know, is it the case still that we're the defensive power that you have is sort of where we start and we build from there? Is that kind of the philosophy?
Yeah, more or less. I think, you know, you said it last year, that was definitely our strength. And this year it doesn't look to be any different. You know, we've brought in Michael Chalaka and Jake Futura as well, as some new guys to in the defensive unit, and you know, they've kind of hit the ground running, both of them as well. I mean, we defend as a team. Like, we're very good from front to back defensively. And so for us as center backs and for Byrne, like you mentioned, it's about us just making plays when we need them. And I think we didn't do that in the Tormenta game. That was the only shot on target we conceded in the entire game. Almost 100 minutes. And it's like, okay, that's the reality of this game sometimes. Like, it hurts. And if you don't get the second goal and kill them off, then that can happen. And, you know, we had that in our minds going into Greenville. Mm-hmm. And I think Byrne took it quite personally with his performance. He was, I think we defended really well. We gave up a poor penalty and a chance on a set piece that Byrne made two incredible saves on. But I think we're going to be a team that we're not really going to give up chances. So when it does happen, because it's going to happen, we need to make plays, and we need to keep our team in it. And then, like you said, it takes a little bit more time with new guys on offense to get that chemistry and find the feet. And we have a lot of talent going forward, though, so I'm not too concerned about it.
Yeah, and you've seen moments and flashes of a little bit of you know, of that talent going forward. In terms of off the field, who of the new guys has kind of surprised you, maybe stepping into leadership roles or bringing some personality to the locker room?
I think there's a few big personalities. It's been fantastic. I mean, there's some funny guys, honestly. Devin Boyce, he's a character. Great locker room games guy. So. Juan Galindres, he's a character too. And you know, like, all of those guys, they're very experienced, so they're not shy to speak their mind and hold other guys accountable and you know, push the standards, which has been amazing. It's quite at least in my time at the club, it's definitely the most mature locker room that I've experienced here. Everything is moving in the right direction for sure.
So looking ahead now, you got you're headed to Fresno for Friday night, and then Wednesday you head to Chicago in the Open Cup and for Chicago Fire 2. That's a team that you handled pretty easily, and we didn't see much of the game, but 3-1 scoreline in preseason. It's preseason, doesn't mean a lot, but I mean, you've gotten a look at these guys. Are you feeling pretty confident going into Chicago on Wednesday?
Yeah, and it's a mindset shift that we've tried to implement going into this year too. That you know, we're at the point in this kind of project under the coaches where we're not necessarily just building anymore. Like, we're ready to win something. So we go into every game that we play now. The expectation is to dominate the game and to win. And that Fire game is no different. I mean, we have to respect them. I mean, there's a lot of talented players on that team, like very, very talented boys. And if we're half a step off, I think they can hurt us. So, you know, they've said, like, we're going down there to win. and they've already planted that seed even before we've gone to Fresno. I'm not overlooking the Fresno game, of course, but this week is the expectation is 2 wins.
We hope for that for sure. For you, yeah. For us, for all of us. I think that's all I have for you, Mitch. I really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
We'll be watching. We'll be cheering from here from Madison. I know we're bringing a bus down.
Yeah,
I won't be able to make it, but the bus is coming down. You'll have a good section of Flock folks down there in Chicago for you, and we will see you then on the 13th.
Yes. Yep. Hopefully with a few more points in the
Bag. All right.
Have a good one.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Thank you.
All right, let's go around the league now. Just three other games this past weekend. In the first, Richmond continues their slow start, falling at home 3-1 to Tormenta. They are, I think you have to say, Richmond Kickers are early favorites for the Wooden Spoon. Connor Doyle opens this one up in just the fifth minute with a banger from about 20 yards. And then Neil Watson added another a little bit after halftime. Some very questionable defending from Richmond on that Watson goal. Richmond did get one back on kind of a fluky own goal, 2 minutes into stoppage, but then Tormenta sealed it up in the 96th, capitalizing on a pretty bad back pass. You can also give this win really to Ford Parker from Tormenta, the goalkeeper who looked really good against Madison a couple of weeks ago. You remember that? He recorded 6 really, really strong saves in this one to help Tormenta to the win. In Knoxville, Lexington continues their kind of disappointing start. Knoxville gets a 2-0 win. No breakthroughs in this one until the 70th minute. Rodolfo Castro chipped over Amal Knight, and then Stuart Ritchie sealed the deal with a blistering left-footed shot back in the 89th minute. Lexington now has dropped 3 straight, I think, including Open Cup. And then Spokane, on the other side, continues their surprisingly good start with a 1-0 win over Northern Colorado. The only scoring in this one is a Luis Gil penalty, which he earned it, and then he converted it, and that's all Spokane needed. And that is Spokane's third straight win. After their opening day loss, they've now won 3 straight, including U.S. Open Cup. All right, we're going to finish with stoppage time. But before we do, I'm going to go back to what I was talking about before, about the travel schedule. It is going to be a tough bit of travel for Madison. In the interim, I did look up the actual schedule. So we're going to Fresno Friday, not Saturday. I think I said Saturday. It's Friday night, 9 p.m. At Central Valley Fuego. Then Wednesday at Chicago Fire 2. And then we have the weekend off, and then our next match is at home against Richmond Kickers. That's their home opener. That's Leonella Bessie's retirement party, and that's the Henny Derby. And then the following Saturday is the Battle for Madison, the UW-Madison friendly. So actually, this travel schedule is not as bad as it seemed when we were first talking about it. All right, going to stoppage time. Alex, what do you got?
Yeah, so as some of you may know, I represent Extra Time Talent, XTT, which is a soccer community and platform built to promote and just celebrate the game of soccer in Madison and Wisconsin as a whole. And last year we had our first event, the XTT Classic, mm-hmm. over Thanksgiving, where we put together a roster of about 24 players. And we had a nice, fun Instagram Live draft, NBA style. We talked about it a bit in the intro episode. Uh-huh. But this upcoming year, we are looking to host 2 events this year. So the XCT Classic will be returning for its second installment. And we are introducing a summer showcase game tailored towards high schoolers.
Nice.
No official date yet, but it's going to come hopefully near the end of July. And so currently what we are doing is continuing to finish out the specs for it, complete the marketing plans, you know, do all the stuff on the business. Yep. Do all the stuff on the business side that needs to be done. But in the meantime, I wanted to take this as an opportunity to open up XCT towards anyone who may be interested in supporting the community, pushing soccer forward, uh-huh. and uplifting these players' stories and the soccer community as a whole. And a really great way to do that and also get your name, whether it be a business, brand, would be to sponsor for one of these events. And so if anyone that is listening is interested in, or generally just curious and would like some more information, we have a bunch of stuff that we can share with you and would love to just have a conversation about it.
And how do they find you?
Yeah, so our email is alex@extratimetraining.com.
Is it extra time with an E or does it start with X?
Starts with an X.
Starts with an X. Extratimetraining.com.
Or you can just follow us on Instagram at xtt_608 and shoot us a DM.
@xtt_608?
Yep, @xtt_608.
Yeah, be supportive, folks. I mean, this is these showcases are, is the classic going to be Thanksgiving again?
Yep.
And that's mostly like college level players, and then but you're opening one up for high schoolers, and it's just a really cool. And if you scroll back through their Instagram feed, you can see some really great little videos from that classic.
Yeah, and we have actually on our profile, if you look outside of the reels, just on the post, we have the visuals that we used for the players and their announcements, and we have some really innovative and cool ideas for how we're going to promote this summer event, and we're really excited. So.
Awesome. Well, we will definitely be on top of that, and you'll hear more about that right here as we go forward. My stoppage time has nothing to do with soccer. We're recording this on Wednesday because I was away because it's spring break from the kids, and we often try to go somewhere for spring break. And so we went, my wife found this place, and it is completely random. I don't even know where she found it, but Starved Rock State Park in, it's near Ottawa, Illinois. It's on the Illinois River, and it's just fantastic if you like to be outside. It was raining and kind of cold and whatever, but the kids were troopers, and we got like an Airbnb, and we hiked like 4.5-5 miles each day just through, and you think of Illinois as being flat, but along the Illinois River, there's these just massive canyons, like all these little creeks and streams are like draining into the Illinois River. And each one has over the millennia carved these massive canyons into the sandstone. And they're just so cool. There's like waterfall every 100 yards. And it is so cool. And we went to one of the canyons, St. Louis Canyon, all the way back. And there's these little stands with the map on it, says you are here. And somebody had written in permanent marker, 3 women were murdered here in 1960. So I looked into that a little bit. There's a whole documentary about it on HBO, on Max now, which is, and it's called The Murders at Starved Rock. You should watch it. It's crazy. But it's a really, really cool place to visit if you want to get away. It's only 2 hours south of Madison. So if you go to the Chicago Fire game, want to take an extra day, head over to Starved Rock State Park. All right, that is all we have for you this week. We'll be back next week with a game or two. We'll figure that out as we go. But until then, have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you soon.